Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Bichette. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Tuesday, December 6th, 2022. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free through the tireless efforts of Dr. Michael and Jeannie Rice on the website at whyagain.org, whyagain.org. And if you go to that website and click on the Start Here link or the words Start Here in the upper left-hand corner, it will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. His book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of the book contains a narrative description of the primary tool in this work. It's a description and explanation of that tool. The tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. And it's a tool I've been using to great effect for over 18 years to improve the quality of my life and most of my relationships, and to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that each and every one of us has been given. You can also download the actual worksheet process itself. It's just a PDF file. You don't even have to put yourself on a mailing list or put a credit card information. Click the link, download the file, print it out, copy it as often as you'd like, and use it over and over again absolutely free. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And if you choose to do that, by the time you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you choose to tap on that, it will let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet. It contains an abbreviated version of that worksheet process. And it contains a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. You can also download a whole host of audio files or shows just like this one, where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. And if you choose to listen to them, they can serve as a powerful tutorial for you to help you get maximum benefits from this tool in the shortest possible time. And we help people do all of that soon and often, primarily because it improves the quality of people's lives the more they use these tools, and secondarily because it tends to prompt comments, questions, answers, and testimonials. And if you have any of that to share with us, please give us a call at 563-999-3581. Or alternatively, you can send us an email. You can email me at tjh@mindshifters-academy.org. Or you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. And if you email us a comment, a question, an answer, a testimonial, we will address it on the internet show. And as time allows, send you an email that says, here's the day and time that we discussed your comment or question or answer or testimonial. And then you can listen back for your feedback. And it's a good way for people who are busy during the show and can't tune in live to get their questions answered. It's also a viable way for people who just don't want to talk about their stuff and be identified as having this issue or that issue. So you can do it anonymously if you so choose. And we appreciate when people give us a call, let us know what their comments or questions or answers or testimonials are, because it helps make us, it makes it easier for us to live into our intention with this work. The intention with this work is to be a service. So please let us know. How can we be of service to you? What's your comment? What's your question? What's an answer that you have found related to this work? If you have a comment or a question, call 563-999-3581 and press 1. Like Susan, area code 610. Is it Susan?
It is. Hi, Tim. Hi, Dr. Tim.
Welcome.
Hey, thanks. I've been practicing the Pratervan thing, and it's probably occurred to anybody who does it, but his blessing of self and others, starting with the heart, and then saying, I love you and I bless you, is sort of like a generic enlightened goal. It's like what you would want to do at the end of doing a worksheet, where you would arrive there. And I've been practicing it, and it's been just great. And that doesn't mean that there haven't been little bumps in the road, but I feel as if when you do that, or when I do that, you are automatically stepping into full self-responsibility for your life, your feelings, your reactions, to everything. You're stepping away from being a victim in any way. And you're also stepping away from accepting the kind of global negative anxiety-producing thoughts that I often have before I've got a hold of my brain, like the first thing in the morning. Anxiety can be worse when I first wake up, or in the middle of the night if I wake up, and usually what starts in my head is some stupid thing I did or something that's coming up that I'm worried about. But more often these days, just fussing about the state of the world, all the various battlefronts we're dealing with, and to step back and treat these thoughts as things and say, I love you, I bless you. There is something that happens which loosens the cords around the heart or whatever, and allows me and probably others who do it to come back to only just now where I am right now and realize this is not my responsibility, because worrying is a kind of fixing with me anyway. If I'm worrying, I'm trying to fix something. And it's such a relief not to have to fix anything. So I guess this is a testimonial. I'm just saying it's been the most freeing practice. And I do it a lot. And I just want to say I'm going back and starting the Pratervan book as if I've never read it before, only just started it. But that's what I wanted to say. And I'm using it in a very strange situation in my very own house. We have this man who's been homeless for 15 years living with us. And my first my first mode of operation was to help him find food stamps and find a place to live and find him a job he could do, even though he has a little blind dog that he keeps with him all the time. And what I'm finding is that in a very quiet way, he has absolutely no interest in doing any of those things. And he came on Michael's radio show a while back at my recommendation, and he told Michael a little bit about his situation, and Michael was suggesting this, that, and the other. And he was not interested, and he was a little offended. He thought, you know, I've thought about these things, he would say. I've thought about all these things. This is not helpful. You have no idea, you know, what it's like. And I was doing my deep breathing, and bless her heart, Jeannie texted me, and she said, I'm doing deep breathing. Even she was triggered by this because the tools weren't the right thing right then for this man. And the Prattervancing has been a tremendous help because the first thing when I see him in the morning, and he's very easy to have around here, he is not a hard guest at all. We hardly see him, and he's thoughtful. He helps me at the refugee center, and that's a little job for him that we do have, and he's happy to do it, but it's basically a volunteer job, and he just gets paid for it at the end. But if I say, I love you, whoa, that's an incredible thought. That's like, I can't judge you if I'm loving you. And I'm loving you and I'm blessing you. And all this business you've been teaching us about allowing, being curious, observing, doing the Prattervan exercise is like stepping into a zone where I am free to observe and allow and breathe. And it's a constant challenge because I know it's a nice thing. It's an asset to want to fix things, but it's also not such a good thing. And so we've been getting along better. Not that we weren't getting along, but he comes upstairs a little more often, sometimes sits in the kitchen when I'm chopping vegetables and tells me a little tiny bit more about his life. And I could talk forever about him because he's just such an interesting man. He seems to have absolutely no interest in anyone. And he has said several times that he doesn't think people are very nice and he doesn't like them. He likes animals. And a couple of days ago, I said, do you not like Tim and me? And he didn't answer. He just said, you've been very nice to me. And then he said, if you want me to leave, I'll leave. As if that was the next thing we're going to do is throw him out. I said, we promised you could stay here at least through the winter just to avoid the cold. And then maybe you'll go to Florida where he's from, whatever. But I mean, you're safe for the time being and we're happy to have you and it's no problem. And I feel as if the whole universe is handing me gifts on a platter because of these Prattervan exercises, this little practice, that's all it is. It's like the end of the worksheet, plop, it's right in front of you from the get-go. And it's still good to do a worksheet if you have to, but anyway, I'll stop. That's what I wanted to say about all this.
Well, I think it's absolutely wonderful. It's the kind of testimonial that we got. 17 people were on the call when we did the support group for the book club on this, and no less than 9 people gave testimonials like yours. Some of them much more specific, some a little bit more general, but if you stop and you slow down and you think about it, if you just are willing to let go of everything you've been conditioned to believe about your thoughts and your emotions, and I was telling people recently, I had an 82-year-old come in for therapy for the first time, never been to therapy in her life, came into therapy, 82 years old. And I was talking about all of this kind of stuff that we teach. And I asked her, so how many times in your 80-plus years have you heard the kinds of things we're talking about related to your emotional life and what causes your emotions and what can help you with them? And she said, never. Right? The opposite is true. She's been taught all of the you made me mad, you hurt my feelings, you're scaring me, etc. And the fundamental thing we observe in this work is I'm the one that creates my emotions by the way I choose to interpret and then respond to situations, by the interpretation that I choose and place on life circumstances. Right? So here we are. You're talking about having all kinds of anxiety and worry and negative thoughts about this person or that person. And what happens when you take control of your thoughts and say, instead of thinking how I'm right and they're wrong and they should do this and their life will be better and if they did this, my life wouldn't be as bad as it is, and instead of pouring my mind energy into those thoughts, how about I just pour my mind energy into thoughts like, I love you and I bless you?
Exactly.
Even if nothing else happens, if there isn't this connectedness of ripple energy and all of the law of resonance, even if none of that is true, in the moment, I've pulled my thoughts away from I'm right and you're wrong and you're causing me pain, and I've shifted my thoughts over to I love you and I bless you, I interrupt the process within me that's been generating my negative emotion, even if nothing else happens.
Yeah. And nothing else has to happen right then at all, because it isn't urgent anymore.
Well, things only become urgent when we declare they're urgent. Right?
I know. You know, yeah, I've been thinking about, I've been doing journal writing on what are the messages in my head that are popping out, messages I got as a child. You do not impose on anyone. If somebody does something nice for you, you thank them profusely and you try to return the favor. Those are two things. And I'm looking at this guy who once in a while he says, oh, I'm glad I'm here, it's warm, or thanks, not even thanks. I think he may have half in a tiny voice said, thanks for letting me stay here. There's no profuse, you know, exclamations of appreciation for what Tim and I are letting him do. And although he's sensitive about imposing, he could look upon what he's doing here as mooching and imposing, and I could too. And so I'm looking at that, and I asked Tim Bingham, did your parents teach you that you should never impose on someone, or if you did, you should thank them a lot and return, you know, give them a gift or return the favor? And he said, actually, no, I didn't learn any of that. And as a result, partly, Tim really likes having him here. Tim Bingham is very much of an introvert, very quiet. He works in his study most of the day. He reads a great deal. And he says, I kind of like having Michael around. And I said, how come? And he said, well, he fills the bird feeders. He does some attending in chores. And I think, oh, that's nice. You know, is it worth it? And he says, yeah, it's kind of nice. And then he says, I also just have a good feeling that I'm finally doing something that Jesus might have wanted. I'm finally doing something for somebody. And I thought, oh, yeah, I know. That's true. And Jesus really gave us an easy assignment here. We're really not suffering any. You know, you think about self-sacrifice and how you go out into the world and you feed the poor and you get exhausted and you give away all your money and you give away your shoes and whatever it is, some extreme thing. And Tim said, God made it really easy for us to do a good thing here. So Tim and I are doing a lot of thinking and watching and noting all the machinations our minds are going through, and this person is really probably fairly uncomplicated. I'm not sure. Just can't tell. Certainly as a good worker at the refugee center, washes the dishes fast and puts out the food, and gosh, I could retire. I go in with him, and, you know, I could go sit and read somewhere. He's so fast and good. So it's just been a real trip. But the Prater van came just at the right time. Otherwise, I might have gotten bent out of shape and wanted to make plans and finally had the guy leave because I thought he should for some reason. Anyway, I'm going on and on. Thanks for listening.
Well, it is. It's really interesting. It's good. Here's the thing is, as soon as we start should this and should that, whether we're shoulding on ourselves or somebody else, we're in judgment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so
yep.
I'm sure you've heard people talk about if you want to expand your life, you need to travel.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons for that is you'll run into people who were raised completely differently, and they're wonderful people. They're loving, they're generous, they're kind, they're respectful,
right,
according to their customs, right?
Right.
And yet what they do might seem completely disrespectful according to your customs.
Right.
And so the more you travel, the more you get exposed to different people and different customs and different beliefs and different patterns of language and behavior, the less you're likely to judge negatively every little thing that doesn't go exactly the way you were trained to believe it should go.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's so true. Yep. Well,
And this person that you have came to us. right. But you're doing it in a different way. You work at the refugee center and you see people there and you invite people in your house, et cetera. But the thing is, this person, for you or anybody else to look at him and say, he should be making enough money to live on his own or this, that, and the other thing, you know, in another culture, that's not so much the case. As long as he does nice things like fill the bird feeders and wash the dishes over at the refugee center, and as long as he's, you know, not doing harm to anyone, if and when he finds people who are willing to help keep him functioning with food and clothes and shelter, who are we to say that he's wrong in the way he's doing it?
Yeah.
And what happens to us when we say he's wrong?
Right. Terrible. It's really
the first
poison.
Thing that happens is we go into contraction. We go into constriction. We generate a negative emotion that then we have to experience firsthand. And he may or may not share in that or tune into it or have any concern for the emotions we're putting ourselves through.
Yeah. That's so true.
So I think it's wonderful, and it's a great observation, and it gives me the chance to say once again, even if there's no big ripple effect through the universe and there's no law of attraction and there's no law of resonance, even if none of that happens, we can watch what happens within ourselves when we shift our thoughts away from this person should not be doing that and they should be doing this and this is wrong and I'm right and they're wrong. When we shift our thoughts from that over to I love you and I bless you, right there, we can feel a difference in our own energy system. And our own energy system is the thing we've been given dominion over. It's the thing that we are responsible for. And all it takes is a little effort, a little awareness, a little waking up to what we've been doing and how we've been doing it. A little honest evaluation about whether or not we prefer the results we're getting, and then we can be motivated quite easily to do something differently.
Mm.
And it doesn't mean that we are better than somebody or that they're worse than us. It just means in this moment, we're going to choose for love. Oh, wait, that kind of sounds like the way of mastery. In this moment, we're going to choose to share only our loving thoughts. Wow, that sounds like the way of mastery. And I don't know if you...
Go ahead.
You think what?
I think the overall effect, it's like putting a pebble into the pond. The first thing may be a shift inside, but it becomes a complete different way of being on the planet for me, and I can find my way there. I still go back to the old kind of thinking, scared, all this, but starting the ball rolling with hand on the heart. I was telling my daughter again, she called me this morning and she said, you know, I've been really having a hard look at the anxiety I feel, especially in the morning. I had a diagnosis many years ago, I never told you, of low-grade ongoing anxiety disorder. And she said, I've gone off all my meds and I'm really feeling my feelings and they feel like a pile of demons. I have a lot of voices in my head. And I told her about that woman theologian, who was it that said, sweetheart, you're in pain. Who's that? You've often quoted her. It was years ago now. You haven't mentioned her.
Yes, and her name will come to me, Sylvia Borstein.
Oh, yeah.
Sylvia
Borstein. I was telling...
And I'm not sure she's the theologian, but she talks and she talks very gently to herself, puts her hand on her heart space, and she says, you know, Sylvia, sweetheart, you're in pain. Take a few deep breaths.
Yeah.
Calm down.
Yeah.
Then we'll look at what's going on, and then we'll decide what to do. But right now, Timmy, sweetheart, you're in pain.
That's cool. Yeah, I told her about that, and I said, in a way, it dovetails beautifully with the Pretervant thing, because then when you put your hand there and say, sweetheart, you're in pain, take a breath. I love you, and I bless you. Now, let's go ahead from there. And Catherine, my daughter, said, Mom, that's wonderful. It's like she just drank
it's
it
like
up.
Magic.
So
yeah, it's like magic.
So,
and except it's not magic, it's just the way our systems work. And when we've been programmed to work our systems, you know, in a backwards way to create pain for ourselves, and we don't realize that's what's happening, then we just keep doing it.
Yeah. She was conducting a retreat this last weekend based on a book she has just published. And she said being out of her own habitat in another place with people who knew her only through her writing and her morning meditations that she's been doing every day since the pandemic started, 5 minutes of whatever the liturgical year says the passages are in the Anglican and Catholic traditions. She said, I have a lot of people in my life who don't know me personally but know me through this. A lot of them came to this retreat. And she said, of course they've put me on a pedestal. And, you know, you and I could talk about that. But she said, what I realized is I've got all these demons in my head telling me that I screwed up here and I'm bad there and I'm too this and too that. She said, I kept listening to them and trying to metabolize what they were saying. And then we did a whole section on with journal writing. And I went off by myself and instructed them to do the same. And we all wrote in our journals. And my journal was filled with self-talk that was not helpful. It was not nice. She said, what is going on? And that's how we got into the discussion about the Pretervant and the hand on the heart business. She's having a good, hard look at how we hurt ourselves, you know, historically, way back. Michael talks about how as a child you might be told you're wrong or there's something wrong with you or you're not doing something right or you're lacking in some way. He said how much that hurts a child And that's very much part of our culture. That's how we were educated. I guess I'm getting on a soapbox, Dr. Tim. So why don't
I just want to say, you know, when you talk about your daughter and what she's going through, I just keep flashing on Pema Chodron and several of her books where she talks about the same kind of thing, where she's called mm-hmm. upon to go be in a leadership role to work with this or that, and she flip-flops from thinking she's special and then thinking she's lower than whale poop and all back and forth. And so, you know, I don't know that that's appropriate for you, but or for your daughter, but you might want to point her in that direction, because there are a lot of good teachers, whether they're Buddhist or they're Christian Scientist or they're Unity or whatever, where they've done their own work and they've watched themselves flip-flop and they've just used the tools and helped navigate through it.
Yeah.
Because every negative thought you have is either a lie or based in a falsehood. It's an old tape playing. It's not about the present moment. And if you act from it, you're just going to be making your life situation worse. You can't throw negative thought or emotional energy into your life and make it better.
Yeah. Dr. Tim, do you remember a title of a book? Or I could just look up and see what she's written.
I don't remember which ones she talks about that specific thing, but, you know, her books that I have in rotation, one of them is Start Where You Are.
Uh-huh.
And another one is
I know When Things Fall Apart is one of them.
Things Fall Apart is a real good one that I probably listen to each year. And I know there's a third one that's not coming to me right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it will come to me.
Yeah. Well, that's good, though. Thanks.
Welcoming the Unwelcome is the third one.
Mm-hmm.
And so these three are some of her books that I listen to probably at least once a year.
Wow, and you can listen. They're on audiobooks?
Yeah, I have them through Audible. And gratefully, it's not in Pema Chodron's voice, which the accent is too difficult for me to enjoy. So.
Oh, good.
It's a woman who reads it for her.
Yeah, nice. On another subject, when did you do that interview with Dr. Barry, Ryman? Was that recent?
Yeah, that was since October.
Oh, okay.
Because he was part of the Integrative Mental Health Summit, and And as a result, he was able to recognize my email when it came through and said yes right away. So.
Nice. I hope you do interview him again, and I would love to look up and will look up his center or where he's working, because if my grandson heads to Florida, it might be a resource for him.
Recovery Unplugged was the name of his group.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I recently, you know, I had somebody ask me about it, and I thought, you know, there's just so much good stuff on those On Your Mind podcasts.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just, you know, they're just sitting there as a free resource. You can go to theonyourmindpodcast.org. And it isn't a really good interface, but there is the ability to search. So if somebody wanted to...
Mm-hmm.
Check out, you know, all of these are free, but if they wanted to check out the one you're just talking about, they could just go to On Your Mind or the On Your Mind podcast.org. I believe both of them, with the word the or without it. I think they both go to the source, to the same page. The On Your Mind podcast.org.
Mm-hmm.
And if they go there and click the search link, then type in, you know, Barry Ryman or Unplugged, it'll come right up. The most recent one was just published today, and it's titled Neurosculpting with Lisa Wimberger. But the second one on the list is the one you're talking about, with Dr. Barry Ryman and Recovery Unplugged.
Mm. The fascinating thing about his talk was that he said he did not want to get sober. He never started with a sense of a willingness to do that. But he did make a deal that he would be sober for 90 days and live a healthy life and then see where he was at. So some part of him knew it was a good idea or something. That just fascinated me because I think my grandson is there.
And it's like the opposite of the man who's living with you.
Yeah.
Right? Who doesn't want ideas and doesn't want to change what he's doing. And they're both okay. Right? It's not your life to live.
Right. Well, this is going to be ongoing, this exercise of, I mean, this guy is a gift because we're getting to look at some early junk that never needed looking at before. But, yeah.
Well, and I think it's just a great reminder about the Pierre Pratervan work, and you're having just one more testimonial that we had nine of them out of 17 people when we did the book club group. And
yeah.
I've had a number of people over the years who have chosen to put that tool to use. I like talking about it as a tool, put the tool of blessing
mm-hmm.
to use in their lives to great effect.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's one of those that I'm very grateful that we can offer that interview to people for free. And of course
mm-hmm.
it's richer and deeper if you read the book, to buy the book and read it,
mm-hmm.
either of his two books, The Gentle Art of Blessing or 365 Blessings to Heal Myself and the World. But if you don't have money for that, you can go to the mindshiftersacademy.org website and click the search button and just put in the word Pierre, and it will take you right to a page where the only thing on that page is his interview. And just click the link and listen away.
It's a fantastic interview. In fact, I've got a plan. We have a new rector at our church who's just lively and affirming guy, and he does these terrific little Bible studies that are unusual, and I think he would really love to be part of a book group to read that book. And the preliminary would be anybody interested can listen to the podcast. That's a great interview.
I agree. I think he was on. I think it was delightful that he was willing to share all the way from Switzerland, and
mm-hmm.
I love his stories and storytelling. So,
yeah. Okay. Well, thank you, Dr. Tim. Why don't I get off?
You're very welcome.
You can carry on.
And deserving. I will mute you so you can listen, and I appreciate the thoughts. And I look forward to the next time you raise your hand and we chat.
Thanks.
Blessing.
Me too. Thanks, you too.
So we have some time. We've got about 19 minutes left. The call-in number is 563-999-3581. Be happy to take a call rather than start into reading, since we're fully 40 minutes into the show and haven't touched the Way of Mastery yet. But we have people on the call. If you have a comment or a question, if you've listened to the Pierre Pratervand interview and or the Guy Finley interview, which we also recommend for people. Guy Finley's book was Relationship Magic, and lots of gems in that book and in that interview that he was kind enough to grant to us. And we have time to discuss it if you're so inclined, and or if you have any comments about the Gentle Art of Blessing as a tool or a process, if you've used that in your life to any effect, give us a call, 563-999-3581, or if you're on the call already, press 1 and say hello. What are your thoughts about that as a tool? What's been your experience, if indeed you've tried? What are your comments about my observation that it begins to have value simply because I shift my thoughts away from the negative, the judgment, the constriction or contraction, which is exactly what the Way of Mastery encourages us to do. Wake up to the fact that as we choose the focus of our conscious awareness, we create our experience of life. Michael and Jeannie are relaxing for another day, so we will be playing the second hour of that book club or whatever it is with Yinka. And we have a support group tonight from 6:30 to 9 p.m. Central Time. Please feel free to join us and or pass the information along to anybody you think might be interested. You can find out everything you need to join us for free on that support group at mindshiftersacademy.org website. And please remember or pass it along to somebody else that there are two separate pages. One has a separate login for Tuesdays, and one has a different login for Thursdays. And it's far easier when people use the right login rather than trying to message me during the middle of the group and have me figure out a way to get them the proper information. If nobody has a hand up, we might take a look at what's happening in Lesson 31. You know, earlier in the lesson it said, as you question where you've placed your loyalty, as your soul awakens, your limiting beliefs naturally crumble. And it invited us to take a look at, what are some of the beliefs you've had in your life that have changed over time, either because new data has been presented to you or because you've grown and matured or your life circumstances have changed? Where we left off in Lesson 31 was at the beginning of a section titled, What Will You Choose to Value? And the text here reads, trust and loyalty, then, must flow from the mind and the mind's power to choose what it will value. Be you, therefore, loyal to love. Be you, therefore, loyal to your perfect union with all of creation. Trust that one who birthed you and who has been guiding your journey home all along. For remember, I have said often that from the very moment that the dream of separation began to be dreamed, already the answer was provided. That answer has been called the Holy Spirit, the right-mindedness in the depth of your being that cannot be touched. I like to say it can't be chipped, dented, rusted, faded, or broken in any way. It's your essence. It's your birthright. It is what will guide you home. The text goes on and says, rest in the right-mindedness of choosing only love. Extend complete freedom to the waves that come and go. This would be like what we were just talking about with Susan and Tim Bingham. They have a person come into their house and they want to do something nice for that person. And then they start saying, but shouldn't he do this? And shouldn't he thank us for that? And shouldn't he be working to get his own place? And shouldn't he? This text is saying, extend complete freedom to the waves that come and go, to all of the people you meet in your life. Don't should all over yourself or all over them. Extend complete freedom to all of the waves that come and go, to all of the people you meet. Rest in the right-mindedness of choosing only love, extending love in each moment. In this sense, the weather is a wave. Caesar is a wave. Your spouse is a wave. That is, as you would look at them as a body-mind, everything that happens is just a wave in the ocean. They will come and they will go. And yet, if you abide in the field of love, you abide in timelessness and eternity. You abide as the spaciousness that embraces all things, trusts all things, and thereby transcends all things. Here then, beloved friends, is the pure essence of loyalty and trust. If your loyalty is in anything that can crumble, you've merely not yet fully chosen to place your loyalty in that which cannot crumble. If your trust is in a requirement that individuals act and behave in a certain way, you have not come to trust the perfection of love that is already at work in everyone's lives and calling them to deeper levels of remembrance. See then the perfection of all events. For the waves that arise in the temporality called the world have no power in and of themselves. They are already held in the arms of a perfectly loving creator, and each event truly serves no purpose except to nudge that soul, that spark of pure awareness or intelligence, to look deeper beyond its illusions. When anyone attacks you or projects upon you, they are merely crying out in their own fear and insanity. The awakened one looks upon them with love and merely says, "Oh, is that so? Well, very well then, yes. Thank you for sharing. Have a nice day." And that one goes on trusting and lets their life be an expression of the loyalty that they give only to the voice of the Holy One within them. Look and see where you are with trust and loyalty in your own life. Simply ask yourself, where are my idols? What am I attached to and why? Remember that those with thoughts of, quote, I and, quote, mine, they know not the true nature of things. When you say, my car or my wife, you're not dealing with reality, for all things belong to creation. There is nothing that you can possess except the capital R reality of what you are as the thought of love in form. The next section is titled, when you choose love, you become free. Come to see then that when you choose love, you become free. Who can harm you? What gain or loss can affect your peace? Each moment as you remember love, you give love. Everywhere you go and everyone you see is touched in a quiet and secret place. They may not know why they feel attracted to being in your presence, but you will know. You are simply choosing to be, and mark my words well here, you are merely choosing to finally awaken and be creation incarnate. For creation is but love, and when you extend love, there is only love. Remember then always, beloved friends, that which crumbles can only be form and not content. Love can never crumble because it is the content that is the presence of the Creator's reality. Because love is content, it is unchangeable, unchanged, and unchanging forever. Perfect freedom comes to any mind that shifts its identity from the level of the body, from the level of the interpretive mind, from the level of the egoic mind that insists it constructs, that its constructs are real, that its constructs are correct and valuable. And then it shifts from that and becomes identified with love. Identity with what is conditional and temporal can never produce what is unconditional and eternal. The power of mind can leap from the unconditioned, from the conditioned to the unconditional through the decision to place value only on that. So those last two paragraphs again. We'll make it three. Remember then always, beloved friends, that which crumbles can only be form and not content. Love, the content of life, the essence of life, can never crumble because it is the content that is the presence of Creator's reality. Because love is content, it is unchangeable, unchanged, and unchanging forever. Perfect freedom comes to any mind that shifts from its identity with the level of the body. It shifts from the level of the interpretive mind or the level of the egoic mind and the level of the constructs that the egoic mind insists are real and valuable. When it shifts away from that and becomes identified with love, it reaches perfect freedom. Any mind that does that touches that perfect freedom. Identity with what is conditional and temporal can never produce what is unconditional and eternal. And the power of the mind can leap from what's been conditioned and trained into it and brainwashed into it. It can leap from that to the unconditional through the decision to place value only on love, only on life itself, only on the actuality of existence. So that's where we'll leave it. We've got another page or two left in that lesson. But boy, I know, there it is, right after we talked with Susan about the situation. Trust, allow every wave that comes and goes to be what it is. Catch your judgment. Catch your shoulds and your knowing that you can put into words and you can label as this or that. And as soon as possible, when you realize the tension that comes, breathe into it, soften, and cancel the thoughts and beliefs that your mind is valuing in that moment, and then you move into allowance. and your life will start to change in ways that you will most likely find preferable to the tension, the bitterness, the hurt, the resentment, all of which comes from judgment. So allow every wave to be its own. That's our lesson for the first part of this first hour today. I will remind us all that we come from love. We're made of the stuff we call love. We actually are love, and everything else is false. And here's the second hour, Yinka Part 2.
Come back to that experience of yourself being that pure presence of being that you experienced with your daughter, then you'll know who you are.
Okay, well, because...
Good breath.
Yeah, that was a hard breath. Because, yep. You know, as we spoke before, what I said, you know, my grandma who passed away when I was young was the only person who loved me unconditionally because my parents were very conditional. And I'm trying to be... And I feel like, I don't know, 99.9% I am with my daughter because even
right.
argue and things like that. And she's like, oh, you don't love me anymore. I was like, I always say to her, that's not true. I love you anyway. It doesn't mean I'm always happy with your behavior, but I love you. That doesn't change it, you know?
So my offering would be a much healthier conversation to have with your daughter would be to say, sweetie, right now, you know, there's some goals I have for you and you're not achieving them, bringing up hostility for me. And it seems like I'm now pointing my hostility at you, which I am, but that's got nothing to do with the fact that you are love. That's the truth of who you are. Whatever I point at you, that's my problem. This is mom's issue. I have my hostility. And yeah, last night when you were out late and you didn't tell me and, you know, and then I found out you did this, all my disapproval stuff came up. And I'm working on cleaning up my disapproval of you. In the meantime, I want you to remember and I want you to know who you are as love. And that's exactly what I'm working on too as your mom. In fact, maybe we could work on this together. Tell you what, would you sit down, because I've had this issue too. Would you sit down and just hold the space for me? Just be that sweet presence of love that you are while I work through this worksheet on myself not feeling like I'm loved. You might find yourself, you've got a very powerful ally in healing this wound that probably goes back many generations in your bloodline.
Because it's never like I love her in like any less or whatsoever. The only thing I said to her, I still love you the same way I did, but I'm just right now not very happy with, you know, what happened, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm not happy. Not like I'm not happy with her, but I'm not happy, you know. That makes me feel basically
right.
upset, you know.
But you notice that doesn't mean a thing to her. What means a thing to her is she's not experiencing the presence of you as love.
Mm-hmm.
And she interprets that through the same brain cells that you passed on to her, that you interpret it, that you're not loved. She interprets it as I'm not loved. And she's mm-hmm. taking responsibility for what's going on with you. It's the same issue that you have with your parents. And, you know, it's one of the most common issues on the planet. And we need to be cleaning up because that's the original wound that most people suffer from their whole lives and never find a way to work through it. And so, you know, I suspect if you're typical, like most of us are, that we'd probably have to go back many generations to find one parent and one child who went through their whole childhood, each experiencing themselves as the presence of love and knowing that that was the truth about them. And so that's what's going to be, you know, Yinka started out this show was sharing a worksheet she did and a powerful unconscious part of her mind came up and, whoa, didn't even know I was carrying this. I think you're getting closer to understanding what you're carrying in the way of self-disapproval that was taken on by that relationship with your parents. And fortunately, you're committed enough to be working through this with your daughter, but just notice how she interprets it, and she's interpreting it the way you interpret it. And it's probably going to be many, many worksheets to get through to the other side of that where you can say to yourself when you think of yourself, oh yeah, that pure melting presence of love.
Mm-hmm.
And you let that into your physiology. You let your heart soften. You let your heart open. You know, in fact, mm-hmm. put your hand on your heart right now and just breathe into that. Wow, the truth is, what's stored here in my being, the truth of my being, is the active presence of love. And I can let my head connect to that part of my heart and the truth about me.
You see, I know, like, my parents married because I was on the way. They're still together,
right.
But my marriage was never, never, like, fully working. You know, there's no harmony in a marriage, but they kind of get used to living together. I don't want that. I never wanted something like that. But I know because I started asking my dad about my grandma and things like that. And I think my grandma didn't feel love as well because her mom, so my great grandma, died when she was in early teens. And her dad remarried and the stepmom was quite not nice. And she moved out, my grandma, with her sister. They moved out of the house, you know, to started living, you know, out, like, together, but, you know what I mean, not in a family house, basically. And the brother,
right.
The two brothers, which were there as well, moved out as well. Basically, the stepmom separated, you know, separated children from the father, basically. And they were left kind of to manage through life by themselves. And, you know, soon there was First and then Second World War, so, and that Poland, so that was really hard times.
So here's what we call you. We call you an early adopter. And that means you're the first one in the family system that's awakened beyond the family pattern of pain and trauma that's been going on for how many generations, and you're working on healing it. And that's a big task. You know, when you're the first one, and who knows, 2, 10, 100, maybe 100 generations that's actually started to comprehend this, that's a giant piece of work.
My parents, both, including my dad, they kind of emotionally switched off. So that was, you know, always my struggle in my house, in my family home, you know. Because,
well,
you know, they would buy me things, but they would not show emotions.
Well, you now have a tool that will change those patterns. It's not going to change tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to change next week. Here's what I guarantee. 5 years from now, 10 years from now, you'll still be doing worksheets on these issues. But what you'll be doing is you'll be cleaning up a pattern that's been going on forever in your bloodline. And, you know, in the Western scriptures, they're talking about energy now. Here we're talking about genes. That's why I said this is a teaching about physics, physiology, genetics, and psychology. So when they said the sins of the father will be passed, yea, unto 3 and 4 generations of those who hate me. So let me unpack that statement. First of all, again, the definition of sin in Aramaic is it's an archery term that means off the mark. So any energy that's off the mark for a human form that's made for love, hate, fear, rage, guilt, grief, drama, and trauma is stored in that system and passed to the next generation. So the sins, the energies off the mark of
mm-hmm.
the previous generations will be passed to 3, 4 generations. That means that in your structure and in mine, every thought, every feeling, every perception, every reality generated by every person in the last 4 generations, that means, including me, 31 lives, is stored in my genes.
Mm-hmm.
It's all there. What your mother and father, what your grandmother and grandfathers on both sides, what their grandparents did and what their grandparents did are all stored within your structure right now. And all of that was passed on to your daughter. Somebody's got to get conscious enough to work through that, clean that up. Now,
yeah.
When you think about 4 generations, where do you suppose four generations back got their thoughts, their feelings, their perceptions, their constructs? Obviously, they got it from the previous four. Who got it from the previous four? Who got it from? You know, if you go back just 30 generations, in the genes of each and every one of us, there are 1.6 billion people. What do you suppose the 1.6 billion people that came before you and I have been through when we look at the history of the world? World War One, World War Two, Korean War, Vietnam War, you know, Spanish-American War, Civil War. I mean, like, what have we been through? It's insane.
Yeah.
And now we're at an age where we're emerging as love and starting to wake up and go, oh, we could be doing this differently. You know, if you go back, I mean, there's a lot of pain, a lot of suffering, crazy stuff, wars going on still. But if you look at it, you know, if you look back 50 years ago, the hundreds of millions of people that were starving and didn't have clean water and, you know, the tragedy that was going on in the world, you know, in the last 50 years, that's improved so much. There are so many people that are waking up to service and living as love and cleaning up the mess on the planet that it's monumental. And it's like you're taking things to the next level of, oh, what's the possible human? I'm going to do my part to clean up my genes so that we can do this together.
Yeah, because I would like my daughter to have, I always was saying that I want her to have a better life than mine.
Yes, well, I'm with you 100%. I have four granddaughters, and I'm especially interested in cleaning up what's been happening to women on the planet and the energetic patterns that women have had stuck in their minds and stuck themselves with. Of course, there's responsibility, but also the abuses that have taken place and such, and cleaning that up so that we get to move to the next level of living as human beings. So thank you for the work you're doing. Millions yet unborn will benefit from it.
Thank you very much.
And I just know, you know, right now we're creating an energy space. In this energy space, is always available to you tomorrow, next week, next month, 10 years from now. You can always tap back into this for support energetically and know that you're supported in doing each and every layer of the work that you need to do this.
Thank you, Michael.
You are most welcome and deserving. Blessings.
Gabriella next.
Hey there, Gabriella.
Yes, sorry. I didn't know how to unmute. Thank you very much. Thank you for having me, and thank you, Michael, for being here. I forgot my questions because you covered quite a lot, and it was actually covering some of my questions. But I think mine is a little bit. I will tell it like that. How is that possible? What I see from my side, like. Some people don't have to have the same problem as me looking for the answers. Like they are completely normal. Like I don't want to say I'm not normal, but I'm looking for something because something is there. What is, I feel it inside me that something is there. But some people are completely normal. They don't take it that seriously. They just go with the life. They don't question things. They're doing things. They don't look for the answers. And then coming to me, myself, I'm looking for the answer. Why? I hope it makes sense. Hello?
Yeah, I think he just got a signal mic on a moment.
Oh, excuse me. I had muted. I had started to speak. If you look in the opening of my book, you'll see the introduction begins with a quote from Henry David Thoreau. And he says this, "The mass of men lead lives of quiet desperation. What is called resignation is confirmed desperation. From the desperate city, you go out into the desperate country. You console yourself with the bravery of minks and muskrats. A stereotyped but unconscious despair is concealed under what are called the games and amusements of mankind. To be awake is to be alive. I've never met a man who's quite awake." So don't let them fool you that there are all those normal people out there. under the surface, and I'm saying this from experience of 50 years of working with people continuously, everybody's carrying around a load. They may be able to live on the surface of it. You know, they get home and say, well, all I need is a fifth of scotch and everything's fine. Oh, just give me my sugar cookies and I'll be okay. Oh, let me smoke a little weed. Oh, let me take my antidepressant. My offering is that there are not many what we would classify as normal people out there.
I think that kind of makes sense. And thanks for that. It was just, I was like really questioning myself, like what is going on with me, like why I'm searching and stuff. Then I'm talking to other people, they're completely fine or they seem to be okay.
Right. Well, that's the brainwash of the world, you know, that you're the only one with the problem. That's kind of one of the early thought disorders. You know, we're designed to live in a condition called, I mean, if you watch a small child, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months, they are in enthusiasm. I mean, they can even get enthusiastic about painting on the wall with what's in their diaper. Right? You know, they're just enthusiastic. And we're designed to live in enthusiasm. And in theos means the creator. We're designed to be connected to love. We're designed to live in that. And what happens is someone comes along and gives us a message. And that message is usually something about, and Yika touched into it very directly, very powerfully, that she shared in the beginning of this conversation. And the first message that's given to many people, you know, when they first meet the disapproval of their caretaker, is there's something wrong with you. You're broken. And people start to, you know, what's wrong with, why am I like this? What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
And that's everybody. That isn't you. I mean, we're kind of taught to think, well, you see, that's something unique with me. No, that's virtually everyone on the planet that's doing that game. And when you realize that, then you let go of another thought disorder about yourself and you realize, oh, here I am, a human being made of love, waking up to the truth of who I am. I have some work to do. I have generational patterns, hate and rage and fear and sadness and grief and who knows what else. And I'm going to breathe. I'm going to put the pen to the paper. I'm going to do my work and clean up my life. And when we can get enough people doing that, who then cleaning up their own body-mind units, their own temples, this is the temple design. You know, you look at that, again, the Western scriptures. Do you not know that you're designed to be the temple of the living creator, the living God? Yeah, you're designed to be the embodiment, the incarnation of active love. Not some guy with a beard on a throne somewhere. You're designed to be the incarnation, the arrival on earth of active present love. And all you've got is 1,000 generations. It was taught something else that was pretty stupid that you need to forgive, that you need to remove, to let yourself fully bring that into, to have that fully incarnate into your form. And that means that there's going to be a lot of old garbage that's going to have to splash up and be cleaned out. And that's just part of the process.
So, Michael, do you believe, like, there is a possibility to live the life really, like, completely uplifting and feel, like, free of this or thinking burdens or anything? I'm talking behalf of myself, on my personality or on my body, I will say, on my chest or anywhere like that, and then feel the life, like, same as the kid, like when you're born, like you just come here and you are just a human being, and what you are a love, because that's what you see when you see a baby. It's just basically a human being and pure love, nothing else. It doesn't give you love. No, it's just there and you're just looking at it and that's it. Is this is possible to achieve that again?
Absolutely, 2,000%. And guess what? You won't get it done this year nor next, and you won't be done with it in 10 years. And you won't be done with it in 20 years. And you probably won't be done with it in 30 years. But you'll have a good start because you're probably the first one in your bloodline in 10,000 years that's thought of it as possible.
Oh, that's good. That's That's good. That's really good.
The first one. I mean, think about what we've been doing on this planet for how long. You know, 175 million people killed in war in the last 75 years on this planet. Look at the insanity that just happened here in Texas. Some 18-year-old kid goes out and buys himself a high-powered rifle and shoots 18 10-year-old kids. I mean, what kind of craziness is going on that we could possibly do that?
Yeah.
Well, the kind of craziness is going on is the craziness has been going on for a long time. There's a tool called forgiveness that if you use it, and let me tell you that it took 35 years of me working with it full time to understand it and how to apply it. And if you use it, you will achieve that result. Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you. Michael, my last question, this is not going to be, I hope you don't mind this question. If you don't want to answer, then please don't answer. This is my curiosity more because obviously you achieved what you achieved in your life and you created what you created in life, which is really like remarkable and it's really beyond and above everything. How is your day kind of starting? How is your, like, when you start the day, what is in your mind? If you can share such a thing like that, how is your, like, day going on when you are actually having any, like, let's say negative, or I don't know whether you have, well, negative is there always, like, this. How do you process this?
I use every tool that I've got, every tool that I teach. That's how I learned them. And usually the last thing I do at night, there's a process we teach called still point breathing. It's a way of using the breath to cleanse the body of traumas. Usually last thing at night, I go into still point breathing. And first thing in the morning when I wake up, I'm in still point breathing. And I take time, you know, unless there's some big rush going on for the day, I take time to connect to love and to cultivate my relationship with love.
Michael, I think you shared the most valuable thing for me. So thank you very much. Thank you for speaking with me.
Honored. Delighted. Thank you. Pass it on.
And then we've got Bryony next.
Hello. I just want to start by saying thank you so much to Yinka and everyone else. And I'm very new to all of this material, so I'm very excited to hear you speak, Michael, so thank you so much. And the first question I have is quite simple, but just to help me understand, because I've heard this expressed before, but I feel like I don't quite get it, which is you'd said if we were to say what we were thinking, we'd be speechless. If I'm understanding that correctly, do you mean that's because we're never truly thinking, but rather we are just regurgitating stuff that we've heard and just kind of parroting things that we picked up?
Cycling information from the past. Mm-hmm. Most people call that thinking. So let's imagine, let's define the word, word. If I were to define the word, word as a tool of communication, and that when you're using words, tools of communication, it's indicative of an interaction between two. Would that be a reasonable definition? Would everybody agree with that? So word is a tool of communication indicative of an interaction between two. Right now, I'm talking or you're talking and we're listening. So there are two of us involved. So if that's a reasonable definition, I'm going to invite everybody that's listening to notice that there are words running your head that you're not saying to me or anybody else, right? If words are tools of communication indicative of an interaction between two, who's in there with you? Who's telling you the meaning of everything you think you look at? You know, go back to Yeshua and 2,000 years ago, he said, in order for you to live, you've got to die. What does that mean? I'm supposed to put a bullet in my brain? No, that's not what it means. It means that there is a false identity in each of our minds, a false identity based on those power person messages about what's wrong with me. And I've formed a picture in my mind of a body that I think I am. And I need to disconnect from that image of self to make space for the truth of who I am and to actually have original thoughts come in, to be in a space where I can conceive of something that perhaps has never been conceived of before in the creation. Then I become an actual thinker. I become an actual human being. Until then, I'm just replicating the past.
Yeah, thank you. That reminds me, I had heard that apparently in William Blake's eulogy, he'd said that he'd already died 7 times in his lifetime, as like a nod to that of dying to yourself.
Wise man, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my second question, and this may be a bit naive, and also because I'm new to the material, I understand that, it may land in an awkward way. What I'm wondering is zooming out and perhaps reflecting on like there being a divine unfolding, you know, in life. It's this deeper curiosity for, and it's perhaps not coming maybe from a victim place, but just like a trying to understand about why that's the hatred, the trauma, the pain, the suffering is passed on, you know, through our DNA and our genetics. It's like a curiosity for why does that mechanic exist in this world? Like, what is the purpose and the function of that? And I guess my thoughts are, is that designed to wake us up?
Yeah, my offering would be that if you think about the fact that if the friend that I talked about earlier that was an ophthalmologist said that there are as many connections possible in one human mind as there are molecules in the known universe, what do you suppose the game would be like if we were each using that?
Look very different, probably.
That's when we'll understand the question you just asked. Until then, it's like trying to put, you know, here's an ant looking at the Eiffel Tower, trying to understand it. Tell me about the Eiffel Tower. I want, you know, go back to Yeshua 2,000 years. He says, there's so many things I want to say. You can't hear them. You got no brain cells. You got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. And this isn't a religious principle. It's just that you have to have accurate content to represent accurate meanings of what his words represented, or each spiritual teacher that you might encounter or follow or engage with. You've got to have accurate brain cells for what they're saying, or you can't hear what they're saying. So that's my take on what he meant when he said you got to have the eyes to see and the ears to hear. For he who having eyes does not see, and he who having ears does not hear. Well, gee, I just heard and saw everything. No, you didn't. You saw a construct in your brain from your past that reflected your past, and you think that's what was being said, and it wasn't. So, you know, I talked about earlier, the number one in my codependence workshop, I put out about a dozen different things that I call the pseudo-solutions of the non-being mind. And the number one pseudo-solution is, if I could just figure this out. And in any given room, if I'm in a room with 200 people, and I were to take the ages of everybody in the room down, write them down, add them all up, subtract 5 years for each person, I'd have the number of years the people in that room were trying to figure it out. And you know what? Not one of them's figured it out. Not one person in history's figured it out. You can't figure it out. But here's what you can do. You can forgive it. You can apply forgiveness. You can collapse it and make the space for truth to alter you. Then you'll enter real human life. But as long as I'm trying to take the energy patterns of my genes and my generations and my past and trying to fit what's going on out there into that so that I can figure it out, what I've just said is, well, I have this little ant brain, and I'm trying to rewrite the universe with it so that I can understand it. Universe, you have to count out of my desires. It's like, silly.
I feel so seen.
Hey, it's all of you. You're not alone. It's all of us. It's all of us. We've all been doing it. I mean, that's what mankind's been doing for centuries. Look back. Read the philosophers. What were they all doing? Trying to figure it out. I feel myself very fortunate that I ran into the teachings of this man who basically, you know, my interpretation would be, stop trying to figure it out. You can't do it. But here's what you can do. You can collapse the lies in your mind so you're available to the truth right now. And when you're available to the truth will rewrite you. The truth will change you. And that's why it's so important to honor truth. And if you go back into those Western scriptures, one of the definitions of God was truth. The other one was love. You let truth and love rewrite you, you can just let go of your past and, you know. That makes sense?
Yeah, 100%. And I feel like, yeah, that sort of, if I can just figure this out, that's like the story of my life.
Yeah.
And it has served me well in some cases, but I think that bigger picture, yeah, I think that to invite some humbleness and instead focus on what's here now rather than getting caught up in something, like you said, that with my existing awareness, like, it's beyond me anyway. So it's kind of giving myself permission to let that go and focus on the real work that's here now.
Yeah. And if you're open to it, you know, there's a line in what they call the Lord's Prayer. There's actually what they call the Lord's Prayer wasn't a prayer at all. It was a set of instructions. But there's a line in it from the Aramaic that could be properly translated as making a request of the Creator. Creator, carve out a space in me for your wholeness.
Mm.
Like, clean the seeds out of the squash so there's room for you in here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful. That's amazing. Thank you so much. I'm glad I asked that question. Thank you.
So am I.
Yeah,
delighted.
So am I. Like, why is there suffering? Why must we do this? Just the small questions.
Just the little things, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
All right. Delighted. Blessings.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. And then we've got Gina to end.
Hey there, young lady.
Hey. Thank you so much for the season.
You are so welcome.
For your time.
Boy, you are in the light, young lady.
I know. Sorry. Okay, I'll move a bit.
That's okay.
There we go. Okay.
So what's on your mind?
Okay, I've got a few questions, I'm afraid, but my most burning one is, well, they're all burning, but this is the most burning one. You know, you say in the worksheet about accepting, what was it, the symptoms of healing, you know, that kind of...
Well, no, it doesn't say to accept the symptoms of healing. What it says is, I'm willing to go through the symptoms of healing.
Yes.
And here's the idea. If I'm in resistance, you know, let's take a water hose and water's flowing through it like crazy. And I twist the hose and I twist the hose and I twist the hose. There's 100 gallons supposed to go through the hose. And if the hose is wide open, the 100 gallons will go through in a minute and a half. But I twist and twist and twist. And now to get 100 gallons through this hose is going to take 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
Untwisting the hose is the willingness I'm talking about. If I have generations and generations of hate and fear and rage and separation and pain and trauma and such, and I'm all wrapped up in knots inside, twisted up like that hose, and I open that, God, I could spend a year in that trauma moving through it. I like to call willingness the cosmic grease. When I'm going to take a breath and I'm just going to stop.
You're breaking up a bit, Michael. Just say that bit again.
I'm going to let that soften.
So willingness is the cosmic grease. So it's the willingness part. Because my question
Correct.
Is...
That's it. Yes.
My question is, how long do these symptoms take, if that makes sense? Because that's what I'm most afraid of. Because I'm grieving, as you know.
Okay.
And sort of any negative emotion, I am not very good at feelings, really. I'll change that. I'm brilliant at feeling.
So if I have the 100 gallons that's supposed to go through the hose, and the hose is totally twisted tight, it's going to take 10 years. If I unwind the hose by 25%, it's going to take 7.5 years. If I unwind it by 50%, it's going to take 5 years. How much is my willingness? You know, how long is it going to take? I have no way to tell how much willingness you've got, how willing you are to breathe and soften and let this energy move through. But the more willingness there is, the faster it moves. So somebody that's in a state of unwillingness and resistance energetically, they can take something that took a pain that took 2 minutes to develop and 10 years later still be in that pain. Somebody can take a pain that took 10 years to develop and 2 minutes of full willingness and they're done with it.
Yeah, so my thought of, you know, so I was going to ask, so when you're doing the worksheet and you uncover something, and it does take a lot of courage to do this, can you kind of clear it there and then in the worksheet, in the space of doing the worksheet? I want it easy. I want it easy.
You were here when you heard Yinka share that at the beginning of the conversation, of course.
Yeah, I was going to ask it, because you've had it all day, Yinka, haven't you? Mm-hmm. You were crying, you said.
But that was more of a release. Not crying, I'm sad.
Letting go.
It's been, whatever has come up, it's allowed it to... It was that awareness of how long I've held this in. And it was more of a release of, oh my goodness, I'm just letting this go. It's going.
And Yinka, there were some people that weren't with us. Maybe you could just quickly share that again.
Because I did a worksheet this morning with the group, not this group, but this morning's group. And because I'm doing it as a group, I thought I'd just do it on some kind of mile so it could just open that space for people. I just did something really daft and on a fourth that popped up. And I was like, right, I'll just do it on that because it's just small. And I didn't expect anything big to come from it. But a big thing came from it was it took me back into a vision as well. It wasn't a vision that I could see myself. It was a vision that I could feel into myself when I made the belief. And I made a belief of I shouldn't be here. And I've been living my life every day from that belief that it was created as a child, but I've carried that and not realized I've carried that every day in every decision that I made. And I think the crying was just that relief that I saw it. I carried that for 40 odd years of my life, this belief that just not been seen. And some of it was shock as well of how could I carry a belief that I shouldn't be here for that length of time. But that was just playing around with a silly thought that, well, I thought it was just small, I thought I'd practice it this morning. And so you kept doing the worksheet and kind of just going with whatever comes up. And Michael's talked about the triggers throughout your day. You don't have to go dig totally into your past. Just dig into those little triggers that you see in the day. And that's what brought that out for me, that I never expected to see that or to think I thought. I didn't even realize I thought like that. I knew there was stuff in my past that's happened, but I didn't realize that's the thought that I've been carrying all this time.
So you cleared it quickly then?
Yeah, it's come up. There may be habits that I will still have from that, but I will never have that feeling again of I shouldn't be here.
So that's the willingness and a symptom of the healing. Is that correct?
That's it. That's how it works.
So it can happen quickly. Okay. All right. Well, okay.
It's all up to you.
It depends on my willingness. So that gives me a little bit of comfort, actually. Because, I've got, a lot of things. I mean, one of my biggest things, is abandonment, really. Where would I start with the worksheet on abandonment?
This morning when I started off with, because I wanted to get rid of my thoughts, just shut up. I thought I'll just play around with a shut up thought. And that's what brought me to... I shouldn't be here, because that's part of us, probably also part of abandonment, of feeling that I shouldn't be here. But that realization that I've been, every decision I've made is trying to seek somebody that validates me to be here. And it was like that awareness that I am here. And when I tuned into that, I am here, changed everything. That was it just changed everything, that just knowing that I am here that tuning into, I am here, I don't need to look outside for someone to validate or say, I see you or you're here. It's like, I just needed to see it. But I'm constantly looking out and distracting myself, because I'm always, but my friends always say, why don't you just slow down? Because I'm always distracting myself, seeking this thing of being here. And it was like, I am here. And everything just stopped. And that's when the floodgates opened of the tears and just sitting. And it allowed me just to sit with it in a relaxed state of, yeah, I can actually sit. Wow. And I sit all the time, you know, we all sit, but it was actually be here.
Yeah, I hope I get there. You've
We're glad you're here, Yinka.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Thank you.
And it is in the worksheet, and I know Michael says, but I'm going to say it over and over again. Do the worksheets, even if it's the simplest ones, the ones for children. Play around with the worksheet. Allow yourself to play with the worksheet, because that's what's allowed me to do this. Was when I read the book, I thought, oh, I'm just going to play with this. And I just played around with the worksheet. And I loved what was coming up, because it was like, oh, I didn't realize I thought like that. I've told myself how I think. But it's like, no, you don't actually think like that. Now you're actually seeing how you really think.
And
hiding behind those thoughts.
And it's good, because just listening to you, Michael, and Yinka, it's brought up an awareness for me about, what was it, about leaving, punishment and leaving. And, you know, what my daughter has done is she's isolated me. And you brought up isolation, and that's what sort of brought up. So I thought, if I work on this abandonment that I've had for God knows how, well, since birth, then maybe that these sorts of situations won't keep coming into my life. Does that make sense?
Well, probably, Gina, the greatest atrocity that has ever been done to us, and that we've bought into and perpetrated upon ourselves, is that we have had hidden out from us the fact that we are by nature creators. We create out of the basic constructs in our minds. If it's, I don't deserve or I shouldn't be here, which is usually a message that comes from a power person, then I will tend to create my life out of that message. When I access the deepest levels of it, and it's usually blocked by deep pain, and most people don't want to go visit that pain, but that's where the resolution is, then most people stay away from it and then unconsciously create out of it their whole lives. It's having the courage to go in and do that piece of work that changes everything.
Yeah, courage. We're warriors, aren't we? Face that pain, you know.
For me, it's also having the courage to face what the, well, not mistakes, but kind of the mistakes that I've made, the stuff that I've done that has continued in my life. I now have to go and face that to make that change.
It's a choice, isn't it? We can either have the courage to face the pain and heal it, or carry on with suffering. Right? Is that fair comment?
Yes. Yes. Most people are stuck in decisions. Whatever decisions in the mind are in the mind, something comes along and resonates them, and we just roll along with the decision. We're talking about interrupting that whole process and bringing a whole new energy into the pattern, into the creative process, and creating differently.
Yeah. And it is life-changing, isn't it? If you
Absolutely.
Do the work. If you do the work, as Yinka said.
2,000%.
Wow.
And what I'll say as well is, but I can tell you my story, Michael can tell you his story, somebody else could tell you their story. Until you do the work and see it within yourself, you will not know the story. You can assume what you think, but it's not until you actually do the work that you actually really see what you think.
But as we've said, it takes a hell of a lot of courage, right? And Sorry, Michael, what was you saying?
Willingness.
Oh, willingness, more than courage.
Yeah, a little courage helps, but willingness is key.
And willingness untwists the hose.
Yep. And I mean that on a physiological level. Most people live in what's called a sympathetic dominant state. in the sympathetic dominant state in order to survive. And this is fear, fright, flight, or freeze. In order to survive, physiologically, the microcirculatory system of the body shuts off the circulation flow to all things that are not necessary to survival. You know, if you're out in the jungle and all of a sudden cancel the thought there's a lion chasing you, you don't need to think about, you know, if you're a woman, ovulating. You know, reproduction is not very important at that point. If you're a man, you don't think about creating sperm. It's not very important. You don't have to think about elimination. You don't have to think about, you know, building iron or building blood cells in the spleen. That's not very important. If a lion gets you in 30 minutes, you know, the spleen doesn't, all that stuff is shut off. It all, literally, there are capillaries that have the guardian at the head of each capillary shuts down. It's a set of muscle fibers that shut that down and put people into a sympathetic dominant state. Most people in our culture, in our world today, live chronically in that state. And they want to thrive and they want to be healthy, but gee, their spleen shut down, their liver shut down, reproductive...
Kidneys,
exactly.
In my case, which
exactly.
Is fear.
And people end up with all those things disordered and think, oh, I've got a physical disease. Get out of the sympathetic dominant state, move over to where you're balanced in parasympathetics, and now you get to digest, you get to rest, and your physiology gets to thrive. It's what you're designed for. You know, sympathetic dominance is a wonderful thing. If you're out in the jungle and there's a lion chasing you, you want sympathetic dominance. It's a gift. But once you've escaped the lion, you want to be able to take a breath, let go, and go back to the parasympathetic state where everything else gets turned back on. But if somebody lives there chronically and the capillaries are shut down, then the blood flow to all of those organs that have to do with rest, thrive, and digest are shut down. And that has to be restored. And if that goes on in a person's life for years, it takes significant work to get that to reopen.
So how? How do you clear fight, all of that?
Well, if you go back, my radio show, if you go to our website, whyagain.org, we started doing a radio show 11 years ago. 5 days a week, 52 weeks a year, for 11 years, we've done a one-hour radio show. So there are over 3,000 hours of archives. If you went back to the first opening minute of our first radio show 11 years ago, and you started to listen, and you listened through that show, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and the next day, and you came up to today's show that we did, you wouldn't hear me do anything other than ask the question you just asked. That's how big the answer is. You wouldn't hear me answer any other question than one you just asked. So start listening to the archives. It's everything I teach. You know, if you were to order every DVD, if you were to listen to every workshop, if you were to, you know, that's the question I answer.
Mm.
And I mean, we answer it from a nutritional status. When people do our intensives, we've got an app that has fresh and raw menus. We've got a Facebook page, a private Facebook page with a whole process for shifting your kitchen over to fresh and raw food. So you've got vitality that opens up microcirculation, opens up the possibility of moving back into parasympathetic balance and sympathetic balance. Everything on a physiological, emotional relationship, you know, every workshop, that's what it's dedicated to, is how do you do that?
So it's not just a question of keep doing the worksheets then, that's a part of it.
It's every tool. Now, this whole body of work started out from the worksheet process. Everything is developed out of that. That's the core tool, but that's not the only tool. That's why the archives are there. Anybody can go, if you just go to whyagain.org and you click on
microphone.
The microphone. Yeah, that's where my brain was going. Click on the microphone and that will open the archives. Just drill down and start listening.
Wow.
And, you know, every day for an hour a day, if questions develop, call into the radio show and ask your question. That's what the radio show's about. That's what we're here to do.
How do I call into the radio show? You got Skype, have you?
Yeah, you can. If you go in to the archives, click on it, it'll instruct you how to do that if you're in another country. And if you've got free U.S. calls, you can just phone in. The phone number for the radio show is 563-999-3581, or there's a Skype link there.
Right.
I've added it into the chat as well.
Okay. All right. So so it's that willingness. Okay, yeah, I'll have to cultivate that. And my final question is, have you got any YouTubes on still point breathing and meditations?
Still point breathing is a tool that I teach only personally. I've never written anything about it. I've never published anything on video for how to do that process. It's something you need to be guided through. It's a very powerful way of using the breath, and it's not something that I would just hand to somebody and say, here, go do this on your own. We do have a monthly Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing workshop that we do. We do that via Zoom, and the second Saturday of each month, we have a session that begins at 11 o'clock Eastern Time for people who are registered. And then on the Tuesday following that second Saturday, we do a second session as part of the Mind Shifters and Still Point Breathing. But it's just not something that I'd hand to anybody to use on their own.
Mm, and you
wouldn't
charge
be.
For that, don't you? It's £150.
Well, no, I don't know how the pounds translate. A single session is $150 for that 1 month, for the two sessions. If somebody does a package of three of those sessions, it's $125 each for the three sessions. If somebody does the year package, then it's $900 for the year for that program.
If someone's done one session, you know, 2 days, one session, can they then go and practice on their own?
Yes. When you do a session, we record it on Zoom, and you get a copy of the whole session. So you'll get the guidance, the instructions, everything is there as part of it, yes.
Wow, because I do Alchemy of Breath, Anthony Abednego, or whatever his name is. Powerful, 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 powerful. A good way of shifting stuff, you know.
Yeah, the breath is definitely key.
Absolutely, yeah, and I love the way you say breathe after, you know, on your worksheet. You know, you put them like breathe. And you don't have any meditations on YouTube then? Are you there?
There are.
Are there?
A couple of meditations on in our radio show archives.
Ah.
I had just told there's one CD or download. We have it in a CD, but it's also a streaming download. And I think, how much is the Wellness Through Stillness, Jean? $10. It's a $10 for the download. You can just go to our the website, yigen.org, and click on the catalog or buy products, and you'll see Wellness Through Stillness. So you can order that. That's a 20-minute progressive relaxation for opening the energy field and regenerating.
Wow. Thank you.
Okay.
And
I had told Yink I would get this information. Jeannie, she's driving the car and listening. And she just said that if you go to our website and go to the search bar and type in meditation, that will take you to several different meditations that we've done on the radio show.
Oh.
So Yinka, that's where you can get those meditations.
Awesome.
Just go to the search bar on yigen.org, type in meditation. There's several radio shows where, as part of the radio show, I've done a meditation, and Jeannie's gone in and edited out and made them available.
So what do we put in the search bar, Michael, to find those?
Just meditation.
Meditation.
Just meditate. I did it today.
Oh, you
did? I did it the other day, but I listened to one today as well.
Oh, fantastic. And then all of this, the worksheets and the meditation and eating, I mean, one step at a time for me. This will bring me out of, because fear has been a biggie. You know, I do come from trauma. So there's a lot of fear there, and doing all of that, well.
What I was saying about doing the worksheet, sometimes what we think it is, isn't quite what it is. That's what I've learned. I don't know if Michael, but that's what I've realised, that when I thought it was fear, it wasn't actually what I thought it was.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, where do you begin? So say I get a worksheet and I title it Sheet 1, Fear. You know, how do you start one like that? Or abandonment?
So,
I mean,
how many times have we done this question, Gina?
What was the answer to it?
No, what was the question? How many times have we done this question?
I think
since we started doing this, at least 3 times. So you've got the answer to that one. Okay? Yep.
I didn't write it down.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're going to have to go back and listen to the archives.
Listen to the archives.
And I can send you all the previous, if you email me, I will send you all the previous ones in the email where you've asked this question.
Where I've asked this question?
Yes. You can listen to the answer.
Let me give you a hint, Gina.
Go on.
It's been every time we've talked. Every time.
Mm-hmm.
So notice that you're asking questions, but you're not listening to the answers. So you might want to shift that pattern.
Yes. Yeah, not listening. Yes. That's another worksheet.
There's a good catch.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. At least I'm not saying I don't know where to start. And well, maybe I am. I'm just worded it slightly differently.
If you message me, I will send you all the previous ones.
I'm willing. I am willing, you know.
Awesome.
Yeah. So
very
thank
cool.
You. Thank you, guys. Thank you so much.
All right, young lady.
Michael, can I quickly ask? If I buy the download, that 20-minute one, would you mind if I just allow them once to hear it so people can hear what
I'm just wanting to get
your permission to put it on just so people can have a go at listening to it, and then if they decide to want to go and buy, they can go and buy it. But I don't want to obviously do it without asking you, if you're okay.
Yeah, no, that's fine. Go for it.
Yeah.
You know, the work that we do for nothing we do it free. We haven't figured out how to do it for nothing because we're committed to making it available, whether people have got money or not. And we invite everybody, you know, if it touches you and it makes a difference, do something in the way of support. You know, we're literally working to make this available on a global scale. Do we have any other questions?
Does Gabriella have another question? I don't know if that's a question in there.
Not sure. I think I don't. I think I really appreciate this actually session today, because I was writing a lot during how Michael was talking and also Yinka. And thanks for sharing your story, because I think I was resonating with it so much, what you just said, and you tapped into some of my actually things. So you opened something for me, but this was a really valuable session. Like, I learned really, really a lot, and it opened my eyes quite a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to the next one. Thank you. And then the meditation, don't forget it.
Awesome.
I will do that next time so you can have a taste of what it's like, because I want it anyway.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you. Huge, huge thank you, Michael, for... You just kind of, even like from this morning to now, it's like everything just feels like it's just opened up to me. So, yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Michael.
Watching your arm movements, Yinka,
mm-hmm.
If you go to the Aramaic language, and the Greeks tell us about a thing they called the kingdom of heaven, those words are much more correctly interpreted with the words, one, the community of love, and the community of expansion. So it's quite literally about the expansion of the presence of love. It's not about going to some place in the sky after you die. You're welcome, Joan. Delighted.
And thank you, everyone, for joining in as well and, you know, asking questions and being willing to hear.